Welcome to Simply by Dale HQ. On this podcast, we engage thought leaders on topical issues around law and business in the most simplistic manner.
Hello everyone, my name is Ayobami Elias and I'm an associate at DealHQ Partners. I'd like to welcome you to episode 3, season 2 of Simply by DealHQ. On this episode, we'll be exploring Nigeria's energy transition plan in a bid to understand the key foundational principles that underpin the plan, and we would attempt to determine if it is aligned to the economic priorities of three critical stakeholder groups, that is, developers, providers of capital, and users of energy. We also want to know whether Nigeria is well on its way to achieving net zero by 2060. Joining us today is a very accomplished C-suite leader with over 20 years experience in corporate leadership, where he has driven the strategic direction and organizational growth in several corporations within the global petroleum trading, downstream petroleum marketing, and power generation industries. He is a thought leader and a recognized expert in power production, trading supply, products, and derivatives. Please help me welcome Mr. Akin Akinfemiwa, the CEO of Geregu Power.
Good morning, Ayobami, and good morning to the rest of the team. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, sir.
Good.
Mr. Akinfemiwa, I must say that it's a privilege to have you as our guest on Simply. I'm certain that our listeners are eager to hear your thoughts on the energy transition plan, its capacity to meet Nigeria's immediate energy demands, as well as how it aligns with the economic priorities of providers of capital, developers, and users of energy. At this point, I hope you permit me to jump right down to my first question.
Please go ahead. Thank you.
As one of our objectives on Simply, we try to simplify complex concepts for the ease of understanding of our listeners. I'm sure you'd agree with me that the National Energy Transition Plan sounds so elitist.
I agree with you. It sounds really elitist. And, you know, as it pertains to the common man, I think there's a bit of haziness with respect to understanding.
So my question here would be, does it truly concern the average Nigerian? And if it does, how does its implementation life, business, and the future of the average Nigerian?
Okay, so thank you, Ayobami. The first place to start is why the energy transition plan? The energy transition plan for Nigeria has come as a result of the commitments given by the federal government at the COP26 to ensure that Nigeria as a country has zero emissions in terms of carbon by the year 2060. If we are to achieve that as a nation, then it means that the first step will be to have an energy transition plan from fossil fuels or carbon emitting fuels to fuels that are or alternative sources that are going to go on zero emission, and that we have precisely 27 years or 37 years from today, my maths is right, to achieve that purpose. So that's why there's an energy transition plan. And why are we talking about carbon emissions being reduced to zero? It's very simple. We can see the effect on our climate. Even as a country, we witnessed a lot of flash floods in the north central region of Nigeria in very recent years. If you go to the east, there's a lot of activities with respect to erosion of land. We also see basically pollution as a result of over-reliance on generators. So it covers every aspect of our individual lives, whether we like it or not. And it has implications for the average Nigerian. So the first implication is we're trying to look at a cleaner climate. The second implication is, at what cost are we going to do this in terms of providing a cleaner climate, particularly the transition from carbon emitting fuels or hydrocarbons into alternative sources that would allow us to achieve our net zero objective by 2060. And one of the things that come to mind is, first of all, the affordability. But before I even go to the affordability, let's look at the objectives of the energy transition plan for Nigeria. It says we're first of all going to lift 100 million Nigerians out of poverty and as a result drive economic growth. I'll provide more statistics with respect to that. It says we'll bring more energy services to the full population. That's also fine. It says all the job loss that will arise as a result of transitioning from hydrocarbon fuels into alternative sources will be managed. And also we'll be streamlining an existing and new government related energy transition initiatives. So those are very, very good objectives, but they all have implications. Now, power is central to any economy. And I'm sure that you will agree with me that power provides approximately 60% of any manufacturing's concerns overhead expenses, be it even power from the grid, be it power generated. And even when you look at the energy transition program, you will see that they have looked at how we're going to achieve the carbon neutrality by 2060, and they've looked at five key areas. One is power generation, one is transport, the other is oil and gas, the other one is cooking, and of course the industry in terms of all the emissions. Every area that has been identified here has cost implications for the average Nigerian. Whether we are transiting or we're even looking at the benefits that may accrue as a result of the energy transition itself, it will come at a cost, because alternative sources of energy are going to require a lot of capex investments, and these capex investments have to be depreciated over time, and they are not cheap. So the first thing in terms of it is that we have to look at the cost to the consumers, and that's where the first implication comes in. It will come at a cost, and how do we manage that cost? It may be cheap today in terms of hydrocarbons. We don't know what it's going to be in terms of alternative fuels. How do we move from that step to carbon neutrality? And I think that cost and eventually affordability to the average Nigerian consumer is very, very key. The next thing for me is, how do we finance the energy transition as a nation? Now, if you look at part of the energy transition plan, and again, I stand corrected, it says that for us to achieve that carbon neutrality by 2060, we're going to require about 1.9 trillion, and that's over the next 37 years. So that's approximately maybe about 10 billion naira annually in terms of all the things that we need to put together. Now, how do we intend to fund this? Nobody is going to fund this for us. Yes, we may have grants from the multilateral financial institutions to support and aid this transition. However, the bulk of that spend or proposed or potential spend lies with us. And the only way government is going to fund this is to also enlarge or cast the tax dragnet wider. And of course, once that is done, it also has cost implications for individuals and companies. Because I do not see how government is going to really put together the financing for this. If we decide that as a nation, we want to use part of our hydrocarbon export proceeds from the sale of hydrocarbons, again, that would also have implications for our foreign exchange, in terms of our exchange rate for the Naira. So again, the wider tax nets and other financial implications have to be brought into serious consideration. So for me, it's a mix and match of good and bad. In fact, no, don't let me say good and bad. It has positive implications, and it also has a bit of negative implications. Because when we look at the positive side, the negative side will be the cost, the wider tax net that will, of course, impact the cost of goods and services and overall general living. Economic living. But when you look at the other effects, the ripple effects of putting 100 million Nigerians out of poverty, because we're not even there in terms of power generation, we're not there in terms of transportation. So if we have a well carved out energy transition plan that actually boosts power generation and also boost employment for 100 million Nigerians, dragging 100 million Nigerians out of poverty, then I think that's more positive than even the negative implications that we've seen. And of course, the advantages it has on climate, on the environment, again, that cannot be overemphasized. So that's how I'll capture your first question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Akinfenuwa. I believe that from your answer, we can all agree that it is very imperative that we have this discussion at this time, and that it indeed affects or impacts the life of the average Nigerian. Now, this leads me to my next question. As it relates to combating climate change, this has become a very urgent phenomenon. And one of the major conversations in all public fora is as regards the issue of equity and fairness. Many stakeholders are of the opinion that the drive towards net zero must pay attention to the fair distribution of the economic burden of energy transition in line with the disparities between nations, while also balancing the cost against the overall benefit to each nation. With Africa still grappling mass poverty and limited access to energy, is net zero a key priority for the continent at this time? Also, how do you think that Africa should approach the conversation around just and equitable transition? Do you think that there is significant consideration for equity in Nigeria's energy transition plan, for instance?
Okay, so thank you again for your question. So you see, for Nigeria, and Africa in general, we seem to be in a quandary of sorts. And why do I say that? So if you look at, let me make reference to Nigeria. So if you look at Nigeria today, already our installed capacity for power generation is about, I would say maybe about 11,000 megawatts. But the maximum our grid can accommodate is about 5,000. So effectively, when you consider all the losses along the lines and everything, Nigeria basically has 5,000 megawatts of electricity to provide to the entire citizenry. Now, if we take the energy transition, and that's why I say maybe we're in some kind of quandary of sorts. Now, if we take that 5,000 megawatts and we say we have an energy transition plan, first of all, that takes us to, let's say, using alternative fuels, let's say we have something that takes us to 10,000 megawatts. And let's also say that the grid has the capacity to extend that, to extend its capacity to achieve that increment. It means that, first of all, Nigerians have more access to power. Okay? Nigerians having more access to power means that it will also drive economic growth. According to the Institute of Journal of Energy Economics, it says that for every 1% increase in power, your GDP grows up by about 3.94%. So if you increase your power generation by 1% effectively, you have a 3.94% in your GDP growth. I think that's very important, because power is central to manufacturing, is central to food security, is central to practically everything, including even FDI and all of that. So that's the positive side. Now, when we want to look at the practical side still centers around energy affordability and security. Now, so when I take your question, do I think that it's a priority for us? We have to play balanced, but we have to look at it from a balanced perspective. The first perspective is, yes, if these alternative sources, as we move towards zero carbon emissions, give us increased power capacity or expanded power capacity, then the answer is yes. But the second thing then becomes, with the abundance of hydrocarbon fuels for us as a nation, particularly gas, natural gas, and where natural gas has been dedicated or designated as the transition fuel, are we now going to say that we're not going to maximize our hydrocarbon resources, which provides some sort of security for us and also some form of affordability with respect to power, something that is close to us, something that is near us, something that we just need to harness through good leadership, right? Are we going to junk all of that at the expense of moving towards a zero carbon emission state by 2060, we have to create a balance. And that's one area where I have been an advocate. So is it a key priority for the continent? The answer is yes and no. But if we can create a balance around the transition fuel and using the gas for an extended, using gas to generate power, using gas to power transportation, and also reduce the flaring of gas from oil production, I think if that period can be extended, then I can say that we have a balanced and practical approach towards energy transition and also ensuring that the climate is carbon free. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Akinfemi, for that answer. Now, my next question is this. At the core of the energy transition plan, we look at the utilization of natural gas as a transition fuel. The implication of this for the continent is that we can now move at our own pace while we utilize the available vast natural resources to meet the local energy demands. And we can do this without significantly disrupting the local economy, which is heavily reliant on revenue from its hydrocarbon reserves. Now, given that your company runs a gas power plant, it is clear that the gas shortages are one of the core issues that bedevil your operations. If this is the case, what are the critical steps needed to ramp up natural gas production and distribution if there is to be significant dependence on gas as a transition fuel?
Okay, so thank you very much. Again, I'd said before that, whilst answering your previous questions, I'd said before that there's a need for us to maximize our hydrocarbon resources, particularly gas, for use during this energy transition period. Gas is abundant and we can use gas for power generation. We can use it for transportation. We can use it for cooking. And we can also use it for industry. So it covers all the five areas which are of genuine concern with respect to the energy transition plan. Now, how do we improve gas production, supply, and distribution? Very important. So first of all, I'm sure you know that gas is associated with oil production. Without oil production, there can't be gas. So the first thing is we've had so many policies with respect to gas in this country. And I think one of the first things is to look at or come up with a practical gas policy. And the gas policy, we've had a few gas policies and we have enough eggheads to come out or develop and implement gas policies. We just need the right leadership to ensure that we move in this direction. And what would be the contents of a well-implemented gas policy, a well-crafted and implemented gas policy? For the purpose of this conversation, I'll just give you a few highlights. So the first thing is we have to ensure that we improve oil production. Particularly in the oil producing areas. We've had technically as a country about 1 million barrels of shut-ins in terms of oil production. So first of all, we need to ensure that whatever those problems are in terms of damaged pipelines, in terms of security, in terms of community problems, and all other issues that we do not know, we need to curb these issues that have a devastating effect on our oil production as a nation, and ensure that at least we restore our oil production back to where we used to be. So that's first of all in terms of increasing the volume of gas available. Now, when we do that, we have more gas. The next thing that we need to do is ensure that we then increase this production, oil production capacity, and take it to the next level. And one other thing that we have to, there are a few other things that we can do in this regard. And I think the first one will be to ensure that we create an enabling environment for oil production so that we can boost that capacity. So you see, when I tell you that we're in some form of quandary. I say, are we not going to maximize our oil production vis-a-vis the need to cut down carbon emissions? Because without oil, we cannot produce gas. So once we have a stable oil production regime, then we have an increased oil production regime, then we can now talk about the gas. It's because there's enough gas now that is being flared. Now, a proper policy will first of all separate, right, or delineate the gas power regime from other existing regimes, i.e. manufacturing, transportation, and say, look, this is our power potential at the moment. In terms of thermal generation, which requires gas as a feedstock, this is what we are going to focus on in terms of the volume. So it could be 5 trillion cubic feet of gas, 5 trillion TCF, whatever that number is. I mean, these are arbitrary numbers. We decide as part of our policy that for gas to power, we need 5 trillion, 5 TCF. Now, so we have that. Now, do we then, with what has been separated for gas and power? The first thing is, I strongly believe that we need to remove the cap on the gas to power prices. Because without removing that cap, we cannot create that incentive for investments. So today, gas is being sold at 218. To be honest, nobody sells gas at 218 in the world. Even in Nigeria, there's a disparity gas to manufacturing prices, because manufacturers are willing to pay more because they can pass on that cost to the consumer. However, we have a cap at which we have to sell power, and that cap does not augur well for gas to power prices that will necessitate those investments in the sector. So the first thing is, once we have capped out the volume that we need for gas to power, present and future, then we then move to removing that cap, right? And once that cap is removed, like I always say, we enhance the participation in gas development. And what do we need in gas development? First things first, we need to improve gas production, which I've mentioned. Then we need to improve gas infrastructure. Gas infrastructure for power is very key. And the only way we can improve that gas infrastructure is to create a level playing field and bring in a lot of private sector participants other than the NNPC to invest in the gas sector, to invest in infrastructure. We need gas processing plants. We need gas pipelines. We need booster stations. We need all sorts to a gas supply foundation that will drive power generation in Nigeria. And this is very, very, very key. So the importance of gas production, again, cannot be overemphasized, right? It is key, and it is central to achieving the energy transition program. And it is key to also ensuring energy affordability and security going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Samuel. I think we can now agree that more needs to be done in terms of leveraging oil and enhancing gas developments in order to ramp up natural gas production and distribution before we begin to narrow down on depending on gas as a transition fuel. Now, speaking on leadership and policies in addressing energy transition strategies, experts and stakeholders have emphasized the need to develop homegrown, tailored-to-purpose energy transition strategies, post-copying strategies that have been developed by Western economies. Impressively, Nigeria has achieved significant strides in the enactment of regulations and development of policies required to support its journey to net zero. Key amongst these are the Petroleum Industry Act of 2021, the Climate Change Act of 2021, the Electricity Act of 2023, and the Energy Transition Plan, of which is the subject of this conversation. Now, my question here is, are you of the opinion that the posture of policies related to energy transition are fully tailored to our peculiar realities in Nigeria, specifically in relation to combating poverty, addressing energy access, as well as the utilization of hydrocarbon resources, and also addressing the issue of finance? Also, do you think that the energy transition plan achieves a fair balance between energy access and climate ambition?
Okay, so this question is in twofold, but whether it is the PIA, whether it is the climate change, whether it is the Electricity Act of 2023 and the Energy Transition Plan, everything is geared to move Nigeria in a positive direction if and well implemented. And it also has a positive bearing for the achievements of the energy transition plan. And I keep on telling you, affordability, energy affordability, and energy security. So I believe that, look, there's still a lot of work to do, and we can fast track a lot of these things through the right leadership and ensure that these things get done, meeting all the Millennium Development Goals, the SDG 7 affordable and clean energy goals. We can do all of this, but it's a journey, and we have to look at the journey in bits and with respect to implementation. For me, execution is the bane of any policy. If a policy is well executed, we'll get the right results, and it will be for the benefit of all and sundry. Now, so I think all these plans are fairly reflective of the understanding that, look, we need to move or transition from hydrocarbons to renewable sources of energy. But as a country, I am so particular and so big on energy security, and again, I'm so key on affordability. So I believe that we have started taking steps in line with our current realities to address the immediate issues that will affect our ability to deliver on the net zero goal by 2060. And I also believe that the balance that we are looking for should be more of prioritizing our requirements based on the issues that need to be addressed first before another. So essentially what I'm trying to tell you is that, do not let us put the cart before the horse. How do we provide the energy required to lift us out of this economic poverty? And I think that is the first thing. So whether it's in line with the energy transition plan or it's in line with our own Electricity Reforms Act, let us even start from a point. And from that point, we can actually see the light at the end of the tunnel. Now, in terms of the actual work being done, first of all, we need to look at the utilization of the available hydrocarbon resources, and how do we then move the hydrocarbon resources to the benefit of the Nigerian populace, and how we can balance it with the energy transition plan. So we need to look at also the funding that is required in terms of exploiting and ensuring that hydrocarbon resources is available, and compare it to the cost of that transitioning. Because it is from there, if we for example build hydrocarbon resources to power the entire nation, obviously we'll have more businesses, we'll have more economic prosperity from which we can then tax to build the energy transition plan. So we have to be very practical. And, you know, in summary, I think the energy transition plan is not oblivious of the work that needs to be done to achieve our goals. I think it's just a high-level roadmap for those goals to become reality. But the actual details of the work that needs to be done lies in supporting parts of the entire economy, and that economy coming together to fulfill our goals. That collaboration is key for us to achieve energy security and energy affordability. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that answer, Mr. Akinfenwu. So still on the area of policies, on the 9th of June 2023, the President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, assented to the Electricity Bill of 2022, which has now effectively repealed the Electricity Power Act, Power Sector Reform Act of 2005. The Electricity Act now makes provisions for the development and the utilization of renewable energy, and in so doing empowers the Nigerian Electricity Regulatory Commission to provide relevant regulation and policies to increase the contribution of renewable energy to the Nigerian energy mix. It also goes ahead to boost investments by providing tax reliefs as well as incentives for the implementation of renewable energy projects across the country. Now, we can agree that these are significant strides in pushing for energy transition and in order to achieve net zero by 2060. However, the question remains, do you think that this is enough to engender the transition to renewable energy and net zero emission by 2060?
So, for me, I have... This is looking at the provisions of the Electricity Act. 2023, right? Now, so the passage of that act and all its contents is a very, very good development for the power sector and particularly for the states. What it allows us to do essentially is, first of all, for us to look at what critically needs to be done for me. And I think something that is key and central to the 2023 Electricity Act is that, first of all, there's a complete deregulation of the electricity market when fully implemented. And what that then does for us is that it will create an incentive for multiple electricity markets, whether via the states, whether the states decide to do it and work together in terms of zones. So it could be Northwest Zone, Southwest Zone, Northeast Zone. It creates that foundation for anybody to come in. One of the things that I also see that is central is that it gives a lot of, attaches a lot of importance to consumer protection and consumer satisfaction. That is also central. And of course, enforcement. Renewable energy development, cost-reflective tariffs, deregulated gas prices. These are all positives, particularly in terms for the ECF. But in ensuring that we implement the Electricity Act of 2023, and I have to commend President Tinubu for the passage of this act, for implementing its passage key requirements. Now, for me, what is important is for the states, particularly the states, to actually identify what the key problems are with respect to power, power supply or provision of uninterrupted power, as we call it. Let us look at it in terms of what really needs to be done for the benefit of the consumer. Because at the end of the day, it is the consumer that has the purchasing power. And what do I mean by this? We should identify what really needs to be done, as opposed to embarking on elephant projects that will not deliver anything in with respect to power supply. So, for example, if it's the development of transmission, total of transmission infrastructure, like the discussions we're having in Lagos State, then let's focus on it as a first step to ensure that there's liquidity and there's an incentive for investment in the sector. When you give consumers what they need, they'll pay for it. It's a trust thing. So what I think needs to be done is identify the projects that are critical to ensuring that the consumers pay for what they use. So critically in Nigeria, generation is not a problem for now. It's not a critical problem for now. What we need to do is to bridge the grid capacity to match the available generation. Then we can then begin to talk about the influx of alternative sources of energy to power generation, and then subsequently to the grid. You see, the power business is a chain. Once we have a weak link, the others do not work. So the downstream, which is the distribution, anything that we're going to do in terms of the Electricity Act right now, must focus on what? How do we get the money from the consumer? That's the downstream, that's the distribution, because without that, there's no way any investor will put their money into developing the other aspects of the Electricity Act. So even if I'm a solar supplier and I'm manufacturing solar equipment and I'm also trying to use it to improve or increase generation, of what use is it for me to put 2,000 megawatts capacity of solar technology in Lagos or in Ogun State when I cannot see the pipeline of the money because the grid does not have the capacity? And I think this is where a lot of people need to critically look at it, particularly operators in the sector. It is about the consumer. The consumer provides the pipeline, which is the pipeline financing that will drive infrastructure development and subsequently uninterrupted power supply. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Akinfenwa. Now, still on the provisions of the Electricity Act, the Act has attempted to decentralize the power sector by creating an independent electricity market across the states. Now, this was done against the backdrop of the recent constitutional amendments, which grants states the legislative autonomy to regulate electricity activities. Now, it is assumed that the decentralization of the sector, as well as the creation of state electricity, is expected to improve energy access, delivery, and supply to the citizens, and it also ensures less reliance on the national grid, while it attempts to capture the unserved and underserved areas in the states. Now, while I know that you have mentioned the customers being integral to, or the consumers being integral to, on the value chain, we would like to also know your opinion on the impact of this major sector reform on the market share and profitability of existing companies within the sector, such as yours.
Okay, that's a very good question. When we look at the profitability, so one key area that I see in terms of the deregulation of the sector, particularly giving more power to the states, is that each state will develop its own electricity market. And the electricity market, like I said, would no longer be subsidized. And if it's not subsidized, what it means is that the liquidity is sustainable, i.e. every point on the value chain gets its own share of what is due. And why do I say this? So if, for example, I'm a distribution company and I've purchased power from the Transco, that's a transmission company, then I know for sure that I have enough liquidity from my consumers to pay the transmission company as well as the generation company that has provided the power. And for me, as a, what's it called, as a generation company, I have enough money to pay for gas, settle the transmission companies, and settle all my obligations to the banks or whoever I've actually taken money to finance my business from. So what it does for us, which is why I say it's a welcome development, is that it first of all eliminates the additional cost of finance with respect to your receivables, as we do now, where we have to wait for months before we even get paid a portion of our invoices, and some of the payments can even go for as far as 6 months to a year, in terms of power that we've already sold to the national bulk electricity trading. So if well sustained and well implemented, like I've always said, it's a sustainable market that provides the liquidity on its own without any intervention or support from the government. It's self-sustainable, and the partners and the participants do not have to suffer from finance cost as a result of receivables from whoever is providing the liquidity or whoever is responsible for managing the liquidity in the market. So it gives what I would say, it serves as an impetus for the development of pure electricity markets, self-sustainable electricity markets in Nigeria, provided it is well crafted and implemented. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Akinfenwa. So I know we have previously mentioned financing and liquidity as it relates to the markets and how significant it is in terms of moving forward with the energy transition plan. Now, I'd like to still highlight that the energy transition plan is now entering into its second year, and financing is imperative because we are doing this amidst a distressed economy, rising poverty levels, declining access to energy, a ballooning national debt portfolio, which now stands at around 108.3 billion. This is also done when we look at an increasing global cost of debt, which has now become an albatross to the entirety of the plan. So we'd like to know, what is your opinion on the strategy for financing Nigeria's energy transition plan, seeing as experts have projected the need for about 410 billion up to 2060 and an average of 10 billion annually, most of which is intended to be sourced as debt from DFIs such as the World Bank, the US Exim, and net zero committed financial institutions?
Okay, so first of all, so if you look at the Nigerian Energy Transition Program, it lacks a lot of detail in terms of the financing strategy. And it's very difficult to objectively assess its adequacy or otherwise. Now, what has been done so far is to identify five major investment areas of the economy with existing significant carbon emissions. And government is encouraging investors to consider injecting capital into those specific areas of the economy for returns that are supposed to be financially beneficial and also beneficial in terms of the environment. Now, these five areas are power, transport, oil and gas, cooking, and of course, industry. If we were to narrow down to these industries, I agree it's a good idea. But if you look at the minds of the investor and the government as well, the minds of the investors and the government, the policies have to be drafted properly. I mean, what are we investing in? And what are the incentives that come out of this? That will be the driver of attracting the desired investment in this key areas. We have to be specific. And I believe that, yes, the Energy Transition Plan is another document, just like every other document that comes out. But when you have a document, you have to distill what the key areas are. We don't have to do everything in there, but let us focus on key objectives and bring out the benefits let us look at what will enable us optimally extract and derive the benefits from these key areas. Now, there are also several provisions that have been made for initiatives like the Climate Change Fund, guidelines for securing foreign technical and financial partners, and all of that. But in my opinion, this is still very high level. You are XYZ. You do not have any track record. No, let me say you do not have any track record. You do not have any track record in that field, but you have resources, or you can attract resources. How do we develop the criteria in terms of who does what and who does what and who embarks on certain projects? This the financing plan is very high level. Like almost every plan, there are things I will probably do differently, but I think overall it's a plan that can work. However, the key issues go beyond having a plan and goes into how you can execute it. Like I've always said, I found out that most of any half decent plan can work if the parties involved are very committed to execution, because that's where every plan succeeds or fails. So for example, it appears that the recent change in administration has again doubts the momentum in executing whatever financing plans the previous administration had for plugging the financial gaps identified in the Energy Transition Plan. But again, I'm not aware at the moment of any high-ranking government official or resident that is engaging with our international partners in terms of the Energy Transition Plan. As a matter of fact, who is even heading the Energy Transition Plan as well? Who is driving it? Who is responsible for the key aspects? I'm not aware personally, but it's a long range plan and the government of the day is still very new, so we should plan appropriately and just maintain focus in these areas so that we are able to channel the resources, the financial resources particularly, towards key areas of development and where would derive the benefits. I agree with the amount of money that has been highlighted. It's a lot of money. And again, I'm not sure how we are going to raise that. I don't know how we're going to get the financial resources that is needed. But again, I think putting it together and coming up with a proper plan is key, and most importantly, execution. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. King. I believe that we can all agree that a more effective strategy is needed in order to implement and to fast-track the Energy Transition Plan. So that is the last question that we have for you today. Thank you so much for joining us and for making the time to be with us here today.
Thank you very much, and you're welcome as well. Thank you for the opportunity, and you're most welcome.
Thank you so much for making the time to join us today, Mr. King Fenwa. It has been 50 minutes of a very insightful conversation. To you out there, thank you for being a fabulous audience. Remember, the conversation continues on our social media handles. Do remember to send us your comments and thoughts on today's episode.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Deal HQ Partners. To find out more about our services, visit www.dealhqpartners.com. See you on the next episode.